Hi, hello, and welcome. This is the Zonecast, where we interview emerging professionals, entrepreneurs, and academics. And today we have with us on the show Chase Ando. He's the Chief Product Officer of Ava Technologies. Hi, Chase. How are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm definitely excited about this particular interview and learning more about your story and your background and what you do. Can you share your professional and personal background?
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up working in fine dining restaurants as a chef, and then went to product design school. And that's where I learned industrial design and how to bring ideas to life. And shortly thereafter, I co-founded a company with my partner in life and in business called Ava Technologies. And we help anyone, anywhere, get growing anything, essentially, through these Nespresso-like smart indoor gardens.
Mm-hmm. So can you talk more about Ava Technologies, what it is, and how the idea came about?
Totally, yeah. So Ava Technologies, so we build self-growing technology that enables, you know, anyone who has ever killed a plant or is a serial plant killer to basically be able to grow perfect plants every time on the first go. So how the idea came about is basically, I grew up cooking. I come from a long line of chefs. And it was just year after year that I would be talking to these chefs, and I would see how much waste goes into the entire food supply chain. So we would pay a premium for a large or multiple boxes of fresh produce, only to be thrown away a week later because we didn't use them. And so I thought there had to be a better way. And every time I would ask a chef why we didn't just grow our produce ourselves, I would get the same answers, which is we're chefs, we're not farmers. We don't have the space, the time, or the knowledge to be able to care for these things. And frankly, they just weren't as interested. Just because they had 100,000 other things to worry about. And so one day, you know, after I met my partner, she worked as a brand manager for a lot of organic food companies like Nature's Path Organics. She also worked in other food in the beverage industry at Labatt's and in technology companies as well, like Microsoft. But we ended up teaming up and coming up with a solution that would be able to easily provide fresh produce all year round for the average everyday person, basically to encourage them to grow fresh produce and their own ingredients at home, and in a way that didn't take up too much space, didn't take up too much time, and could basically grow on autopilot without much intervention. So basically reinventing the gardening experience. And that really ended up being kind of the beginning to what ended up being, or has become, a 6-year journey of building a startup and a technology company from the ground up.
Yeah, if you're a chef, you know, you can have a busy operation to run, depending on, you know, the size and scale and of the restaurant. So I can imagine they would totally be reluctant to take on more work such as farming or growing produce in-house, because that can be a task on its own. So exactly. The co-founder, Valerie Song, I believe, how did you both meet?
We play a lot of sports, and we actually, there's the Olympic Oval here in Vancouver, where the 2010 Olympic Games were hosted. We ended up playing volleyball there, and she was with her company, and I was just playing around, playing basketball, and we ended up, I ended up playing on her team. She recruited me, so to speak, and that was kind of the beginning of a beautiful journey, essentially. But yeah, we share a lot of passions. Number one for food. Second for design and technology. And then basically what we wanted to do was, well, we were both very ambitious, you know, early 20s, naive kids, basically, that wanted to change the world. And we saw, you know, the way that we were producing and consuming our food as something that was incredibly unsustainable. And that's where we, you know, our passions met. And we ended up pitching the whole idea for Ava at a startup weekend here in Vancouver. And we ended up winning the competition. And then that just basically snowballed a very long and arduous journey of building the company. But that's the Richmond Oval, just playing volleyball, was where the whole idea seeded.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So when was the company launched? Was it a few years ago?
Yeah, so it was founded in 2016, and we officially launched 3 years ago. So we were in R&D for about 3 years before we actually launched the product.
Mm-hmm. And can you talk about the different products you offer?
Yeah, so the main product is called Ava Bite. It's a five pod or five plant gardening system that, you know, a lot of people think it's just a garden that sits on your countertop that grows your herbs. But really, we see ourselves more of a plant science and software company more than a hardware company. So we're taking very much a Tesla approach to basically digitizing plants through a platform that we're building called EggOS, which is basically a data, which is basically a way for us to gather data on how to efficiently and successfully and consistently grow plants, no matter the location. And basically that's our way of being able to hopefully one day aggregate all that data and then be able to provide it to the wider agricultural industry, to be able to offer solutions for them to grow all sorts of new species, new varieties that they would otherwise not be able to grow. So we have a hardware product called Ava Bite that is a scalable garden for your home. We're also working on, you know, microgreens, which is, you know, yet to launch, but it's very, very close to being released to the public, as well as some major partnerships with large appliance manufacturers to grow much bigger units that, if you could imagine, you know, a unit that would be the size of a double door fridge to be able to put into homes, restaurants, hotels, what have you, to be able to grow on a much larger scale.
It's interesting how technology is being used for indoor farming, like in the case of whether it's something as simple as lighting for your plants or something like, you know, sensors. And obviously there is some kind of monitoring and analytics. So can you talk about how you embed technology in your product in terms of analytics, in terms of sensors? If you can talk about that, do you have an app?
Yeah, absolutely. So it is, the Ava Bite is a connected IoT garden. So it does have sensors. It's got a camera even to monitor your plants, no matter where you are. We produce time-lapse videos for you that you can share on social media. The necessary evil, well, maybe I'll put it this way. Technology is basically a way for us to improve the user experience of gardening and growing plants in general. It doesn't need to be there. You know, there are other products, our competitors like Click and Grow, AeroGarden, that you can get that are just, you know, simple gardens that you would just plug in and away it grows. But for us, we wanted to, again, you know, take a more modern approach. And for us, you know, digitizing the whole, you know, adding a layer of digitization, personalization that we can, you know, offer through the app, where, you know, we take into account what your flavor profile or like taste preferences are, you know, what you typically cook at home, and really integrating the whole lifestyle and your home, your living situation into account. If you're living in say Texas versus Vancouver or Toronto, or if you're living in a really high humid a humidity location like Singapore, you know, we can use the sensors to basically act as ways for us to collect data and then give you the best growing experience by adjusting how much water we give your plants, how much lighting, and at what frequency, and what spectrum. So basically we can adapt the garden to your specific needs and your specific lifestyle versus some of the other products, which is, you know, a set it and forget it type of solution. And the main benefit there is for us to be able to, number one, grow healthier, tastier, and more nutritious plants for you, so that you can cook with it and, you know, nourish your family. But at the end of the day, we also add a layer of being able to offer many benefits through technology. And, you know, the future of smart home is integrated with Google Home, Amazon Alexa, Apple HomeKit. So on top of all the cameras and sensors and all the fancy stuff that we put in there, it's the first garden that you can actually talk to, and the garden will talk back to you. So first time ever that your plants have a voice.
That's an interesting way to put it, I guess. Yeah. because of the data that you're collecting, you can monitor the real time conditions of the plant. You know, if the plant is dehydrated, for example, that is something that you can monitor, and you can water the plant accordingly. So that's you know, interesting way to put it. Your plants now have a voice.
That's right. Typically, for beginner gardeners, it's really difficult to guess whether your plants don't have enough water, have too much water, not enough sunlight, or too hot, too, you know, uncomfortable. Like it's a guessing game, and so we've basically removed that layer of guessing and trial and error. And our promise is that you're going to have 100% germination guarantee. Your things, you know, your plants will grow the first time around. If not, we're going to get you free pods sent your way before you even know it. So that another layer of or benefit to a connected garden is that we can basically detect when your plants aren't growing or aren't growing up to par, and create diagnoses from our end that will enable better customer service or more proactive customer service. So we can predict the life cycle of your plants and your garden itself, the hardware and the components that might fail, you know, after use. And we'll send you the replacement parts before you even know it's going to fail. So a much smarter way of, you know, building a business, but at the same time, delivering a great customer experience.
Mm-hmm. So who's your target customer? Are you selling to end consumers, or are you selling to restaurants? And is it more about gardening, or is it actually about growing your own veggies?
Yeah, so it's twofold. So what we've noticed is that our product appeals to a very wide range of people. So one demographic we do target and we find a lot of success with are new moms that are like the yoga moms of the world. You know, they care a lot about their own personal health, the health of their families. And they're really conscious of the food that they put into their bodies, and, you know, they lead a very active lifestyle, and they try to be sustainable wherever possible. So that, you know, our whole value proposition of, you know, being able to grow healthy plants effortlessly all year round, really appeals to them, and is a huge added benefit to their lifestyle. We also have, interestingly enough, and we're in Canada, so we can talk about this, but a lot of cannabis growers, either first time or more experienced, you know, they typically overpay for retail cannabis, buying it from the government stores, online or on site. And they've always looked for more cost-effective and more fun and engaging ways of being able to grow their own cannabis. So our product really is a good entry-level growing solution for them. We've also found a lot of success with the older demographics, so baby boomers who, you know, have gave up their tending to their garden outdoors and have recently downsized their home. So they're finding that, you know, on their balconies in their apartments, they don't really have enough space to grow a full size garden. So and of course, living in Canada and other parts of the world where it's a little bit colder during the winter, it's difficult to grow anything outdoors. So what they wanted for themselves was a year round solution to be able to grow indoor herbs for garnishing their dishes at home or making cocktails. So it's a very mixed market, and we're trying to find our voice within it. But we found that you know, our product does appeal to a very wide range of customers.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about your traction? When did you begin selling, and how many units have you sold since inception?
Yeah, so we started selling. So we officially launched the product on a crowdfunding platform called Indiegogo about 3 years ago. And we launched the product. We officially shipped the gardens a year and a half ago. And on Indiegogo, we sold about 800 gardens to I think it was like 26 different countries. And since then, we've shipped well over 1,000 gardens. And are continuing to build large partnerships that we have yet to announce, but are coming up in the pipeline this year, which will be in the double-digit thousands of units delivered around the world. So in the EU, in Pan-Asia, as well as in North America. To date, we've raised over $3 million in venture capital funding, as well as government grants. And have built a team of over 16 people. We only started out with myself and Val about 2 years ago. So we're on a very steady growth trajectory.
Mm-hmm. So your partnership that you mentioned, is it like a distributor partnership or a retailer partnership? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a partnership with, hint, hint, the second largest appliance manufacturer in the world. And so we're planning on rolling out our current device with them, as well as much larger units geared more towards the prosumer chefs, essentially. And it'll be a much more premium product, but that's about as much as I can say about it before it's officially launched publicly. But we've also secured partnerships with distributors in Singapore that we've already shipped to and are selling now. We are going to be launching in a major retail technology retail outlet later this year.
In Canada or Europe?
In Canada.
Oh, nice. Well, yeah. That would be nice. Because that way you can, you know, benefit from the foot traffic of technology retail stores and create more awareness about the product and what you do. I mean, like, you know, with online, you get to keep the margins, but retail has its own benefits as well.
Absolutely.
So I guess you can benefit from both. So will you outsource your manufacturing? Do you manufacture it yourself? Or do you plan to like license your manufacturing to someone else? Like how do you make these units?
Yeah, so at the moment, I mentioned this before, or I might have mentioned this before we jumped on the call, but our products are designed and made in Canada. Yeah, it's actually our assembly house is just down the street, 30 minutes from here in Vancouver. We do a lot of the manufacturing and QA in-house at our facility. And it's, you know, it was a conscious decision that we had to make. I'm glad we made that decision because through COVID, a lot of our peers and the companies that we've heard about are struggling with their supply chain. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, moving or I guess reshoring our manufacturing has been probably the best decision we've made so far in terms of how we build our products and the strategy around manufacturing because we have, number one, more control over our product quality, more visibility into the process. And obviously, at the end of the day, we own that process. You know, we get to train up a lot of our in-house staff, you know, who otherwise maybe might not have had the opportunity. So helping out the young folks just coming out of university and, you know, people that may have not been able to find jobs, you know, we've been able to give them not only the opportunity to grow within the company, but we've given them a much bigger scope in terms of like being able to touch the development side, the engineering side, even without the engineering background. So I think being resourceful is the number one thing you can do and be in a startup. And that's something that we've I think done a relatively good job at. And you know, there's a ton of hidden gems out there is what I would say to anyone looking for talent, and are only looking at senior experienced people. You know, there's a ton of ambitious and very capable people that are young and might not have the resume that you're looking for, but give them a chance, and you'll be surprised at what people can do if you just bet on them.
Mm-hmm. So, like as you mentioned, there are definitely benefits to having your own assembly plant locally. But did you find it to be a capital-consuming process in the beginning, building your own facility from scratch, equipment, you know, hiring, training? Did you think that, I guess maybe those things will pay out over time, but in the beginning, at least, did you think it was capital-intensive?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's a lot harder since, you know, there's a lot more that you have to do to train up the people that you're hiring, to get them familiar with the product, the nuts and bolts of the whole thing. Just to be clear, we do we have partnered with an assembly house that does take care of a lot of the product assembly. They're also here in Vancouver, and we basically ship it once the product is in a relatively assembled state. We take it into our own facilities and do the final packaging, the QA, and then the fulfillment from our facilities. So it's a combination. It's a hybrid approach that we ended up taking. Just going back to your earlier question, I do think that it was the right decision to build the initial units in Canada. Because we're relatively, you know, small scale, we're doing hundreds of units, not millions or even hundreds of thousands. I do think that it'll be a much different approach as we look to scale up, especially to international or across international borders. So we'll have to look at partnering with contract manufacturers overseas that are much bigger and more capable than us. But I think anyone looking to start in hardware development and manufacturing, it's a good way for you to not only learn more about your product. And like I said before, it's so important for startup founders in hardware to know the nuts and bolts. Don't think that your problems are going to be alleviated if you just outsource to a contract manufacturer in China or in Vietnam, Mexico. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes people make before they're ready, before they have a process, before they have the demand, they go and, you know, sign a contract with them. You're going to get burned. You're not going to get the level of service that you're looking for. You're going to be at the very bottom of the totem pole since you don't meet the volume expectations or meet their minimums. You're going to be paying a huge premium because you're high risk in their eyes, as well as the lead time is going to be crazy because they're not going to be as responsive to you as to their, you know, longstanding, much higher volume companies that they build for. So I think the strategy will differ at different stages, but as a startup, make sure you know your product inside out before you outsource it to someone else is the golden nugget that I've voiced before, and as well, you know, talking to other hardware startups, that's definitely the approach that they would recommend as well.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you raised about $3 million through grants and I'm guessing some investors. So what was, can you talk about your fundraising process? Was it particularly challenging?
I think any fundraising that anyone has ever done is probably, you know, relatively challenging, unless you're in the crypto space right now. But at the moment, we've been fundraising for the last 4.5-5 years. I'd like to say that we've been really, really lucky, although we've been grinding incredibly hard. It's a very long and arduous process. You know, whatever you hear about fundraising is probably true, where, you know, it takes at least 4 to 6 months to close a check, even if you get a yes on day one. And any indication that investors will close earlier than that, likely in the due diligence process, things will come up. You know, it's Murphy's Law, right? Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. So, you know, the process for us has been a very long, windy road. We were lucky very early on that a gentleman by the name of Paul Lee at Vantage Capital believed in us after he saw Valerie, our CEO, speak on stage at an event. And he, from that point on, said, "Hey, you know what? It seems like you have a great business. You know, you're charismatic, seemingly hardworking, and so I'll invest $1 million into your company." And from the time that he said that, it took about 6 to 8 months to close that check. So yeah. There's a lot of, yeah. I mean, what can I say, right? It's one of those things where you have to massage the relationship. You have to really build credibility on your end, especially as first-time founders, and especially as first-time founders being minorities and having a female-led team, right? It's just an extra two layers of complexity that adds to the whole due diligence process, or adds time to the whole fundraising process. But we started with venture capital, which is usually not the route that people take. Usually it's a friends and family round, and then it's an angel round or pre-seed or seed round, and then they go and raise a larger Series A with a venture capital. Usually that's the story, but and these days with the crazy markets, you know, that has changed. But for us, it was a small, very, very small friends and family round, $1 million seed round from venture capitalists. Since then, we've been able to really tap into government grants focused on clean tech, as well as, you know, small businesses led by minorities, as well as angel investors that have believed in us. And it took a lot of convincing, a lot of strategizing and planning. I'd say, you know, years of planning and strategizing and just pure execution. Because we actually, it was difficult for us to raise anything before we had any traction. It was just an idea and a prototype. So we had to go to a lot of different events. We did a pitch circuit that spanned, you know, Vancouver, LA, San Francisco, New York, Singapore, Hong Kong, Shenzhen, China. And after all of those trips and unsuccessful attempts, we've had, you know, maybe 3 or 4 people believe in us. So I think it's very true when people say, you know, talk to 100 people, you'll get one yes, and don't get discouraged in the process, because that's definitely been true for us and true for many other founders as well.
What do you, since you were fundraising before, you had sales, were you able to get the valuation that you wanted, or do you feel like you had to compromise because, you know, without traction, it's kind of difficult?
Yeah, I mean, of course, traction helps. For us, what we had going for us was a Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign that did relatively well. So we were able to sell about $186,000 worth of pre-orders. So that that was our initial traction and all that we could present in terms of traction. So that's the initial momentum that we needed to close that initial venture capital round. Without that, there's no way. I don't think there, I mean, I wouldn't say no way, but it would have been incredibly difficult, harder than it was. So the traction that we had built through the crowdfunding campaign, as well as the team that we had assembled, justified the valuation that we got. You know, being in Vancouver, I think I'll speak in general terms, you know, people are relatively narrow and small-minded here. They're a lot more conservative. There are people that do think big and, you know, are the Elon, you know, think like Elon, but no way would we, you know, did we get the valuation that we wanted. If we went down to San Francisco and raised, you know, raised full time there, I think we would have been able to get a much better valuation. But that being said, I think we're very lucky to be in this position as first time founders. And, you know, for the next company and the next company that we build, I think I would raise the money outside of Vancouver.
That's definitely true, I guess. Which grant programs did you apply for to receive funding, and were you able to receive substantial grants?
Yeah, I think we've so far raised about $800,000 in government grants alone. I'm personally not the grant guy. You'd have to talk to Valerie, our CEO, and our grant team for that. But for us, yeah, I mean, since we are in the intersection of, you know, design, nature, technology, so we're in agricultural technology. There's a lot of ag tech grants that we were able to leverage, a lot of clean tech grants that we were able to leverage, as well as all the sustainable development type of grants out there. Also the small business grants that have really, you know, saved us, especially through the COVID challenges that we were facing. Yeah, I mean, for more details, I could definitely follow up with you, but Valerie would be the right person to talk to there.
Mm-hmm. So recently we've been hit by, you know, a major economic crisis because of the pandemic. Industries and companies and business activity has been affected. Did you experience any growth or decline in this period?
Interestingly enough, through COVID, we were lucky in that our demand skyrocketed. And not to say that that didn't come with its own unique challenges, but we were very lucky in that, you know, the trends of farm to table food are, I think, here to stay. And if anything, it's moving towards a more hyper local. So being able to grow it yourself or in your own community garden has been definitely the case. So more people are interested in, or more conscious of their own food supply chain and making sure that they don't overpay for the things that you can find at grocery stores, like packaged herbs and fresh produce that come in plastic clamshells that only die off a week later. So it's a huge money sink if you think about it, and scaled up on the macro level, that's a lot of money down the drain, hard earned cash that you're just wasting. So I think more people are penny pinching and more conscious of where their hard-earned money goes. And when it comes to their food, more people are interested in growing it themselves because it's a more economical way, it's a more sustainable way, and at the end of the day, it's a more delicious way and tasty way of being able to grow things. And it feels good to feel like you're responsible for something and have control over something in a time in our world that where you feel like you have less control. So there's a lot of different angles that worked for us or worked in favor for us. But at the end of the day, our capital that was available had been dwindling down, and we had to unfortunately let go of many key members of our team. And that had its own unique silver lining, but we've helped them out in the process to find new jobs that they enjoy elsewhere. and have been in the process of rebuilding that team. Our supply chain also somewhat broke down, where our lead times were insane. So even though we were facing a ton of growth and in demand, it was incredibly difficult for us to keep up with it. So we were selling out units left, right, and center, which is not a good thing, right? Although in some people's eyes, it's a good thing. So there was a ton of unique challenges that COVID and the whole economic crisis brought. But what I will say is, I think we're heading into a much more difficult time in the next few months, or at least by the end of the year, economically speaking, that will expose a lot more truths about not only our food supply chain, but our economic state as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. We'll see how things turn out. I guess now that people are spending more time indoors in their homes, they're definitely investing in improving their indoor living experience, I guess.
Absolutely.
Like whether it's, you know, refinishing their furniture, or perhaps maybe even like indoor gardening or indoor farming. You know, now your home is kind of like your temple where you spend a lot of your time, and even your work time, personal time. So I guess people are trying to improve the indoor living experience, and this might definitely help. Can you share a fun fact about yourself?
A fun fact about myself? Okay. Well, I mean, where do I start? I love, aside from, you know, the whole sustainable green design thing, that industrial design thing that I'm into and is my job really at Ava, I love tinkering. So I build my own motorcycles. I'm just in the process of building a custom bike, as well as a new kit car, and I have plans of building my own house as well. So I take a do-it-yourself approach to everything in life. I think the thing about me is I like to be curious about a lot of different things and forward thinking about a lot of different things. So it's not just gardens that I'm designing, but I have a ton of ambition to build much bigger, faster products than what you might see in my portfolio today. Another thing that I think fuels a lot of the work that I do is the fact that I just love being out in nature. So I grew up freestyle skiing and competing in that space. So competition, whether it's in the form of skiing, I played baseball and basketball on a competitive level. I found that definitely bleeds into other areas of my life. So it's not really a fun fact, but more so something that I've found in myself and a lot of different entrepreneurs, A-type personalities, if you will, that are reaching for the stars, is that usually they come, there's this fire that just burns constantly in the soul that's never satiated. So whether it's the curiosity or learning and growth experiences, we're constantly seeking for a much better way for us to live in our personal lives, but as well as impact the lives of others. So on the side, I'm building resources for other new entrepreneurs that are interested in building their own hardware startup. For me particularly, at the time when we were starting Ava, I had no idea of how to build and launch a product. I didn't know how difficult the journey would be. And I think if I had a roadmap, if I had some mentorship along the way, I would have fast-tracked that process with a lot less mistakes. So on the side, I'm building resources. If anyone is interested, it's called Ando Academy. And that'll be launching very soon. So that's my way of giving back to the world in a way that with something that I wish I had when I was starting out.
Mm-hmm. I feel like you should definitely have studied engineering during your university days.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely would have helped. The thing that I would like to say is that I don't think you need an engineering degree in order for you to develop a product. If you take a different approach where, like myself, right, I merged a passion for cooking and food with my skill set, which was behavioral psychology and the thing that I actually studied, although I didn't finish at SFU, which is behavioral psychology. And then later it was industrial design, so product design. And what I will say is if you can surround yourself with very smart people that fill the voids that in terms of skill set and knowledge and personality, for that matter, that fill the gaps that you are weak at, then you have everything it takes to build that product company. Or if it's not a company that you want to build, if it's just a product that you want to launch, you can definitely do that. Just so hire the engineers, so electrical, firmware, mechanical, manufacturing. These are all disciplines that you'd be surprised at how many people are incredibly gifted at, as well as are much smarter than you at, whether it be in terms of just the innate abilities or their experience level. Just surround yourself with these people, have conversations with them, recruit them for equity in the company if you don't have the cash to pay them upfront. And that's how you can really build a well-rounded team versus trying to do everything yourself. I took a very lone wolf approach at the very beginning that ended up just costing us more money and taking more time to build this thing out. So if you could do all those things early on, then you have everything, at least the foundations to a successful product company.
That's amazing. Well, Chase, it has been very nice speaking with you and learning about yourself and your background and your story and your product and your whole journey. So thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
I appreciate you having me. Anytime. I very much enjoyed the conversation. Thank you, Salman.
You want to share your website? How can people order your product or contact you?
Yeah, absolutely. So for Ava products, go to avagrows.com, avagrows.com. To reach out to me personally, I'm more than willing to help out. If you're struggling in your own product journey, you can contact me at Chase, C-H-A-S-E, at avagrows.com. And happy to share any resources, connections. And I've started to invest a little bit of money into people that I believe in, or product ideas that I believe in. So that's if that's you, please contact me.
All right, that's perfect. Well, thank you so much. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode and you get a chance to learn from the story of Chase and Ava Technologies. And hopefully this will help you with your own entrepreneurial journey in building your own business or pursuing your own career. And as Chase mentioned, you can reach out to him if you have any questions. And thank you so much for listening to Soundcast, and stay tuned for more episodes.